to God. Julian Preston Van Winkle III is a name you will never forget. Julian, the child of Julian Preston Van Winkle II, and the grandson of Julian Preston Van Winkle I, more commonly known as Pappy, have been central characters in and around Louisville, Kentucky since Derby Day 1935. Now, over the years, the Van Winkles have been leaders in their industry. In fact, the Van Winkle last name is synonymous with their brown, wheated products. Many admirers, even the Van Winkles themselves, have created a sense of mythic folklore around their families and the commodities they produce in the bluegrass foothills of the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Most of these stories are puffed up versions of old tales passed down through the generations, or, more likely, they're just false, fake stories made up by marketing agencies to help sell a brand and create a larger profit. All this has caused a load of legacy and expectations to weigh heavily on Julian Preston Van Winkle III. Placed on him by his grandfather and his father and the committed connoisseurs of his concoctions, he feels the warm spotlight shone on him by adoring fans and those who subscribe to the myth and the generated history that surrounds his family, Louisville, and its beverage industry in the surrounding rolling countryside. For much of his life, Julian felt like there was so much he was supposed to do. He was supposed to carry on the family tradition. He was supposed to provide for his family and keep up appearances in the Louisville social scene and beyond. He was supposed to build and rebuild a business befitting of the mostly manufactured mystique surrounding his famous last name. Julian Van Winkle was supposed to be everything for everyone. The weight of all this was crushing for Julian, especially when the world around him was sold off with the stroke of a pen. This morning's text from Genesis begins with an important opening reminder. Do not be afraid. Many of you know that when we encounter biblical text in this phrase, do not be afraid, this phrase in particular, we should always remember that good news from God is imminent, especially in the face of despair and confusion. Abram really needs some good news. A few chapters earlier, God makes a covenant with Abram that he will be the father of many nations and that God will never forsake Abram and his descendants. But in the succeeding chapters, a stark and jarring reality becomes clear for Abram and his wife, Sarai. They do not have any children. In fact, Sarai is not able to have children any longer, so Abraham conceives a child with Hagar, a woman enslaved by Abram and Sarai. And it's almost time for this child named Ishmael to be born. Now, it's important to remember that Abram lives in a time and in a culture that does not value the personhood of enslaved people. So he is awash in grief that this nation promised to him by God will be carried on by a child he did not consider to be fully human. God shows up in a vision and tells Abram to not be afraid because God is his shield, and these things that are coming to Abram and Sarai, those things he promised back a few chapters before, these things Scripture calls a reward, will be very good. Yet, in Abram's assessment, this current reward is not acceptable because that baby that's about to be born is less than human. This is indeed not good news for Abram. Rather than praising God for his new promise, Abram cries out in anger regarding, in his mind, the deepest hurt and unfulfilled hope in his life. Sarai and he are still childless. Abram is hurting. His body and soul are carrying the weight of God's seeming unintervention in his life, and the weight of those supposed twos of the covenant that includes many succeeding generations. So, in Abram's pain, he accuses God of not showing up and reminds God that God promised him, "I will make of you a great nation." And God's response to Abram's confrontation? God invites Abram and Sarai to rest in the awe of hope. God invites Abram to look at the stars, try to count them. Now, I imagine that many of us have tried to count stars this week as NASA released pictures from the Webb Space Telescope. As I gazed at the pictures, I tried to quantify the stars and other planets. And as I was failing at that, I was overcome with awe. And strangely, hope. Because not a single one of us humans can count all the stars. Nor will we ever know how many stars exist. But God knows every star we see, and the ones we could never even imagine, because God created them all. And so it is with Abram's descendants. God creates them all, as numerous as the stars in the sky. Knowing that this world is known and seen and loved, it gives me great hope. Don't worry about your legacy or your descendants, God assures Abram. I've got plans so much bigger than what you can ever fathom. All you have to do is abide in the awe of hope. And when you are anxious or when you are despairing, just look up and try to count the stars and never be afraid. The essayist Wright Thompson chronicled many of those try to count the stars moments in the Van Winkle family in his biography of Julian Van Winkle III entitled Pappyland. He writes, "Meeting Julian and making him talk about his family made me ask myself the same question I'd been asking him. What did I owe my late father? What did I owe a grandfather I never met? What is demanded of a son or a daughter? What was demanded of me?" Julian Van Winkle's life has taken many twists and turns. In 1972, just as Julian III joined the family business, Julian II sold that business to an international conglomerate and kept only one brand for their personal distribution. Then Julian II died suddenly in 1982 and left what was left of the family business to Julian III. By 1990, Julian was scrapping together pieces of his family's legacy here and there with the weight of expectation and supposed to on his shoulders while the family business was almost bankrupt. Then one day he realized that trying to keep up with what he thought was demanded of him by his late father and the perception of what he did right, it was untenable. While trying to count the stars, Julian III made a choice. He determined that the best way was to honor his family tradition, to live into the commitments and craftsmanship passed down by his father and his grandfather. He decided that it was time to try a new thing. He retired the practices and techniques that he knew deep down were not working any longer, and he instituted new ways that recreated the family business. He began to honor his ancestors by taking what they started and making it work for the business in this moment and into the future. Julian chose hope when his life and his business and his family legacy were at a crossroad, when despair was high and morale was low. But he did not forsake what was left to him, those supposed to's, for he chooses every day to honor his family as he rebuilds the proverbial land that was given to him by his ancestors. He doesn't desecrate the land through his choices to transform the family business. Instead, he honors it through his life and his work. Wright Thompson assesses the transformation of the Van Winkle family, and I think all of us more broadly, in this way. Families stay together because of active decisions, because of patterns that turn into tribunals. And they are torn apart most often not by anger or feuds, but by careless inertia. As people of faith who gather in community with one another, we often find ourselves in a similar place to both Abram and the Van Winkles. God creates and redeems far more abundantly than you or I could ever imagine. So we offer thanks and praise to God for that good gift of never-ending relationship. And God's ongoing creative activity expands our horizons and pushes us into the vulnerability of uncertainty. And so as people who respond to the good news of the gospel, we are called to choose hope, even when our lives seem topsy-turvy and we are unsure of what our next step might be. Today's text invites us to live into the awe of hope. To know that God will never leave us despite our attempts to count the stars, to have control over God's continuing reign of love. The land God promises Abram's descendants, it was there before Abram and Sarai occupied it. And it's still there today. This land on which we worship right now has been reclaimed by this beautiful church for the purpose of worship to God and in service to the community. And by grace, it will continue to do so for many years hence. The land on which Abram stood when he converses with God about his deep existential longing for his legacy to continue in children has been transformed into a land that is home to millions of diverse and culturally significant people. And the land on which we stand today, you might not be sure how it will be transformed by the people and pastors and leaders God is preparing to serve here, but we all must live in a posture of hope like God instructs Abram to do and like Julian Van Winkle chose to do. We must choose hope. And when we choose hope over despair, creativity and common purpose permeates our work and our life together. The 20th century author Toni Morrison stunningly writes in her watershed novel, Beloved. She writes, "You are your best thing. You have been given a firm foundation on which you can work with God to create a new thing. The land your descendants will inherit is, in its own way, a land flowing with milk and honey. Each of you have been given everything you need by God to transform this community and this world. Indeed, you are your best things. But I'm going to take it one step further, one that might feel a little bit better to our ears. Y'all are your best thing. Think about it, First Presbyterian Church. You have lots of reasons to be proud. Your legacy of mission and ministry in Dalton and beyond is strong. You've led this community to be a more just and caring place for all its residents. You have shown this community how to rise from adversity and deep grief. You have created and recreated space so that ministry might flourish right here in the center of town. You have sent your children off to be ministers, and you have sustained strong leaders in this church as elders and deacons. And next Sunday, you're going to celebrate the ministry of your beloved pastor as he moves on to his next place of ministry. And now you sit at a crossroad. What's next? The land that has been given to you by our ancestors is now ready to be tilled anew for the next generation. The freedom, the liberation lies in the reality that to continue this metaphor, I guess, the crops previously grown here don't have to be the same crops sown in this land's next season. God invites Abram to live in the hope of doing a new thing, of allowing a family to be created that might not look like the family he comes from, but it is just as much God's family as what he imagines in his mind as he ponders his future. Indeed, y'all are your best thing. Believe it. Trust your instincts and the wise counsel of those who walk with you. And know that the God who promises Abram all he has and abundantly more, the God who creates more stars than we can ever comprehend, that God, our God, is with you now and will never, ever forsake you. Amen.